you back just as soon as I can. Thank you again for calling, and I'll talk to you soon.
Greetings, the automatically deleted husband, and I'm still amazed the phones are being answered. I assume they're not being listened to, but hey, you know, after being so long where it wasn't being answered, but Dorothy Jane, my lady, I love you, and I'm asking for you back over and over and over again. I can give you about 1,944 attempts of trying to do this. But there's a couple things I wanted to say to, because, one of the things I try to do in these, what these voicemails have become is I'm trying to say things, enlighten our kids, especially to theology, understanding our Creator, and to what's happening in the world, because, they're in the world in the sense of, the living and breathing in the world. So I want them to be, be aware. But one of the things that came up, because it's been in the discussion, because one of the things my friend Kristen and I, we discuss often, we spend a whole lot of time discussing the scripture and going very deep into particular passages, concepts, and things of that nature. And one of the things we've discussed many times is 1 Corinthians 16, specifically, where it says, now concerning the collection of the saints, those two verses. And the question is, collection, what does it mean? And one of the things, because the... what I find fascinating is the collection is the logia, which is based on the word logos, the word. So, and obviously, we get logic, where I think is where maybe the reason behind that is we're putting words together. But the collection idea, the only time you see it in the Bible is those two places, verses 1 and 2 of 1 Corinthians 16. What I found fascinating, and because I just noticed this an hour or so ago. Do this the first of the week. Each of you put something aside and store it up so there may be, as you may prosper, that there'll be no collecting when I come. No collecting when I come. And what I find fascinating is typically when you go to a Christian event, there's a collection. And so, Paul is talking about showing up someplace. And he's saying, when I show up, don't do the collection at that point. But what do... Christian speakers, leaders, whatever, organizations, they show up, and often the thing is, hey, let's pass the plate here. Either directly by the organization or the entity that is doing a particular event, or a hosting organization. And the other thing is that also, anyway, my lady, I love you, and I'm asking for you back. But continuing on this, as the recorded goes on.
You have reached the maximum time permitted for recording your message.
I will get rid of this.
If you're set.
What I find fascinating, is this also an implication? You put it together the collection. But is it part of your assembly when you gather together? Again, because the thing that I point out is that when Paul sends his greeting to an assembly, typically translated as church, it's followed by who meets at somebody's home. There's three different names used, I think. So the idea of meeting an institution simply is not there at all. So when they meet, is the collection the same thing? It's worth pursuing. But anyway, this is a fascinating thing. I just give you a video. Actually, it came from last week. There was a Russian scientist going to South Korea for a conference, and they said, you have to deny being Russian or you can't come. And I find that fascinating, because we have this aura of an idea, science, they're based on reason. Again, the book of Genesis, by definition, is science. The Big Bang and macroevolution, the evolution between species, is not science. By definition, it's a theory, it's not science. Because again, science is the observation or the repeatability of something, whereas evolution and the Big Bang, there is no observation of that. Genesis 1, because we see six times, he saw it. It was observed. And again, as I point out, now you have to do is test the credibility of the witness. And I trust him. But it, Genesis 1 is by definition science. But anyway, and you know, because this guy is Russian, you can't trust him. If he offers evidence for something, you can't trust him. This is the world we're in. And I find this a concern. I'm also leaving you a this gentleman, Brian Berletic, a superb presenter on war. You know, which is unfortunate, but he did a very interesting article on a 2009 U.S. policy paper, the Brookings Institute, that talks about the preparation for war with Iran and how it's being set up. You know, including the idea of let Bibi do it, or leave it to Bibi. play on leave it to Beaver. It's a scam. I mean, this, all that's going on is such a scam. And I think this was fascinating. A fascinating report. The paper he mentions, the Brookings Institute paper. If you go to my online copy of his video, right next to it, you'll find, here's the paper right there. So it's easy to find. It's not linked to, it's right there in, anyway, you know, because I downloaded it. But anyway, because this is the technology I have developed. But, I've discussed a lot about Zionism, and there's some political issues there. You know, and one of the other places I've studied less in depth, you know, I spent more time on, you know, the Middle East, Syria, a bit on Lebanon, some in Iraq, some in Iran, of course, especially of late, you know, Gaza, Yemen, and things of that nature. But I've also, you know, because I've mentioned in the past things like Kashmir. And one of the things that happened there many years ago when, because it is supposed to be independent, but, you know, and jointly administered by Pakistan and India. And India, a few years ago, said, no, it's ours. And it's been an issue. And they went in forcibly, you know, besides the guns and knives kind of thing, it's also they cut off communications. They cut off the communications from each other and from the world. And one of the things I described back then, you know, there's solutions for them. Because when you get cut off, goes back to, you know, the Ezekiel 3 and 33, the watchman idea. How do you empower the watchman? It's not me that has to be a watchman over them. I need to empower, I would contend, considering, you know, the technology I have, I would contend the thing is to empower them to be the watchman. Because in Kashmir, there is an Islamic community, there's a Hindu community, there's an atheist community, and there's a Christian community. And I'm kind of biased. And so that's kind of come back in the news because of, you know, what's happening of late because of the upcoming elections. So I give you, because this woman who does this for Al Jazeera, does a series called Start Here. Some of them are quite interesting. Some of them are really, really biased. I mean, they're propaganda. However, the thing that's important about this one, I think this one's pretty good, because it's one of the several things that I've found of late that described Hindutva. You know, because it's fairly well known that Hinduism is the dominant religion in India. Number two, again, is Islam. Number three is Christianity. And see, one of the things I thought about, and I've expressed this months and months ago, is you'll see that there's a strong emphasis of being violent towards the Islamic community. And so you see this with the Kashmir events, and you see this with a lot of this stuff, especially this new temple that just was just dedicated to you know, their god Ram. And Modi was there and did, you know, had the big ceremony, big PR thing. It was built on a Islamic mosque that was destroyed 20 some years ago by a violent group. So this particular video describes some of that. But one of the things I described some time back is, if I can be a blessing to the Islamic community, the second largest group within there, in order to protect them, what that does is then also gives the same mechanics to the Christian community, which is true in Kashmir also. So, you know, I've been thinking about that for, I think it's been years. How to work that out, you know, because again, I've studied a little bit, you know, just passive study of Kashmir, some of the things that's going on in India, especially, you know, the thing about the recent thing is about the temple, about the elections that are starting now, I guess, starting in May, whatever it is. And then, of course, discussed previously the interactions that occurred that were less than kind with the Christian community in the eastern part of India. You know, parading Christian women naked through the streets was less than kind. But, you know, the question is this part of Hinduism or is it something else? And what I've come to realize, and I've been doing some study on it, and it seems indeed, at least as far as I can tell, Zionism, again, is a political thing, notably focused by Theodore Herzl, was the figurehead back in the late 1800s, early 1900s. And it is described as a political force. So when you look at Jews, which, again, there's the question, what is a Jew? But if you look at it as something that is biological, that is radically different than Zionism. Zionism is a political ideology. So you have to be really, really careful of looking at Jews and assuming they're Zionists, or looking at Zionists and assuming they're Jews. Because, you know, there are a whole lot of Zionists, or, you know, the Christian Zionists who are, you know, again, which is... It's like freedom and democracy. They're opposites. You know, Christian and Zionism are opposites. Anyway, but what appears to be true is that Hindutva is the Zionism of India, because it's not Hinduism per se. It's a political entity shrouded in Hinduism. And, it's quite often oppressive or violent. I mean, the events that tore down that mosque some in the 90s that they built this temple on that event killed thousands. So I mean, when we say violent, we're not talking about somebody getting punched in the face. We're talking about thousands dead, and this was the Islamic community. So I've been wondering, so I've done some study and I found some organizations in the U.S. that are battling Hindutva, and they have been doing it for years. And apparently, which I find interesting, there seems to be a lot of people interested in this, battling this, because of homosexuality, because there is a very much against it. So I find this fascinating because unambiguously, you know, I've described before, you know, the fallacy of the 1946, the movie, and how they twist the scripture so badly, it's ridiculous. Because homosexuality is clearly defined in scripture, you know, men bedding other men, arsenicoite, men couch, that's what it is, men bedding other men. And of course, Romans 1 is very even clear, that including with women and so forth, as well as, you know, things in, well, Leviticus, which we cannot talk about, can we? But that's what I'm struggling with now is, I will contend, Islam is based on a fallacy. But as I've described a whole many years ago, love the Muslim, contend with Islam. Because the Muslim is a human being created in the image of God. Islam, the faith he subscribes to, is a fallacy. I mean, I did this 10 years ago. I would claim essentially the same with Mormonism. One of my best friends is a Mormon. You know, and what was it? October. You know, I went to a Mormon church. Not to condemn them, not to challenge with them, to be an encouragement, to be a blessing. Even though I will contend that what they're is based on a fallacy. But, you know, my friend, he and I, we hiked Big Frog Mountain together. It was a joy. And I'm glad to call him a friend. So, the same thing is true. If I end up with one of these groups and start an interaction with them, and if there is a focus on homosexuality, well, I will be able to say, yes, I will stand with you completely in the sense of being able to protect you from those who are doing, especially the violence against you. But at the same time, I will not deny that the Bible is clear. Homosexuality is inappropriate. So just like I deal with Mormons, just like I contend for the Islamic people, in the same way, I will contend for the Jewish people who are being tarnished by Islam, by Zionism, excuse me. It's a problem. So this is a fascinating question, and I've been studying this. Anyway, I'm getting long again. But, you know, so I used an image, the image from that I'm using today, 172 million Muslims, 28 million Christians, 20 million sheikhs. If I can bless the Islamic community, even the homosexual community, which I assume is quite small in India, in order to give them the tools to protect themselves, I'm also giving the tools to the Christian community so they don't get paraded naked in the streets. Because again, I don't think that's comfortable. It's a big deal. And you know, wouldn't be interesting. Look, the homosexual community, they look, hey, you know, the Quran doesn't say good things about us. They're our enemies. The Bible doesn't say good things about us, and, you know, but are they the enemies? No, here's a Christian man trying to act as a blessing to us, even though he says what we do is wrong. In doing that, you know, I keep thinking of the one gentleman who was a devout Muslim, who read the Bible and read, "Bless those who persecute you," and said, "A man can't say that, but God can." And he went to his death, apparently, as a follower of Christ. So, you know, maybe there's a homosexual in India. There's a Muslim in India who I'll be able to, Lord willing, bless. And in the process, he finds Christ. Or Christ finds him. That's that. You know, my goal is not political. My goal is to bless. You know, there's another homosexual gentleman that I really want to bless. He's my son, and I love him. Anyway, I find this fascinating. I'm getting so long again. I need to find allies. And if I find allies, you know, the best one of the best allies. I need to find allies, and Lord willing, sooner or later it'll come to the table. My lady, my wife, I am still pursuing this. And one other thing, one other thing, I did finally get an email response back from State of Tennessee. Oh, you want to pursue this? Just let me know. We'll see about that. Anyway, my lady, my wife, I'm your husband. You're my wife. Again, I use the Bible as the reference, the terminology for that, not the man's law, the Lord, his command. Because again, remember, people say, oh, well, the Bible talks about divorce. Well, if you use the word divorce, who issues the certificate of divorce? The husband. And why? Because of sexual infidelity. At least at this point, this husband has not issued that certificate. And either way, it is putting away. It is not severing the marriage. It is removing responsibility. I think that's easy to back up, as I have before. My lady, my wife, I love you, and I ask for you back.